This is an encore episode of This Is Your Life. Hello and welcome to this encore episode of This Is Your Life. My name is Michael Hyatt, and this is the podcast dedicated to intentional leadership. My goal is to help you live with more passion, work with greater focus, and lead with extraordinary influence. Hey, I'm on sabbatical this month, deep in the mountains of Colorado, working on my next book. And so while I'm gone, I thought I'd queue up my most popular podcasts. Chances are you probably haven't listened to all of them, and even if you have, you might find it helpful to listen again. Regardless, I hope you enjoy this encore episode. In this episode, I'll be talking about a peek inside my toolbox. I'm often asked about the tools I use in my personal and professional life, and I thought it would really be fun to share them in this episode. And who knows, you might just discover some new tools that will help you be more productive at work and in life. But first, this podcast is brought to you by Platform University, an online membership site for helping you launch your personal platform or take it to the next level. You can find out more at platformuniversity.com. I'll be telling you a little bit more about it at the end of this podcast. In fact, I'm going to talk about what we've got planned for this month, so stay tuned. So let's get right into this episode. I have a friend who is a total tool geek. Go into his garage and you'll find all kinds of amazing tools, tools I've never seen before. But he's got a tool for everything, regardless of the job. And I've seen tools I didn't even know existed. And I wish I were more of a handyman, as does my wife. But as my wife will tell you, this is not something I really do well. I'm confident I could do more of it if I wanted to, but I always find it cheaper just to hire it done. But when it comes to computer hardware, software, and gadgets, I'm a total geek. I love my tools, and I especially love discovering new ones. So I thought I'd share in this podcast some of my tools by category and invite you to share your tools in the comment section of the show notes on my blog, and I'll give you the URL here in a little bit. But warning, I do use a Mac. So all of my computer tools are Mac tools. I'm sorry about that. That's just the way it is. If you use Windows, this episode probably won't be that helpful to you unless it convinces you to convert to a Mac, which I would be very happy about. So I want to look at my tools in six areas: hardware, startup, software, blogging, writing, speaking, and podcasting. And this just isn't going to be software. There's going to be hardware in this. There's going to be some books that I refer to and that I use. So it's really a comprehensive look at the tools in these six different categories. So let's start with hardware. Here's the stuff that I use. First of all, my primary computer, my only computer, is a 13-inch MacBook Air. I have the mid-2012 edition, sometimes called the MacBook Air 5. It's the most recent one. It has a 2 gigahertz Intel Core processor i7. Don't worry if you don't know what all that means. I'm not going to get that geeky on you, but some of you want to know. It has 8 gigabytes of RAM memory and 512 gigabytes of hard drive. And kind of my philosophy when I buy computers is I always like to buy the top of the line when I buy it, because I know that within 6 months, it's probably going to be middle of the line. So I always buy at the top. But I'm running Mac OS 10.8, otherwise known as Mountain Lion. Now, here's this kind of interesting, but I have an identical machine that I use as a backup. It's insurance for me because as a speaker, the last thing I can afford is going to a speaking engagement, having my primary computer fail with no backup. So I do have a backup. I connect that second machine via Thunderbolt. I back it up automatically using a software program called SuperDuper, and it backs up every time I connect my primary machine to my office display. I don't have a desktop or another computer. I take this main computer, this MacBook Air, with me everywhere I go. And the thing I like about that is I've always got what I need with me, so that makes it very easy. Now, my home office system, and the people who are members of Platform University, you've seen this, actually the video of it, but I've got two kind of dated cinema displays there that I run in parallel, one at my sit-down desk and one at my stand-up desk. But at my office, I've got a 27-inch Apple Thunderbolt display, the newest one, which I love. The resolution on it's incredible. It's really spoiled me. I also have an HP OfficeJet Pro 8100, which is a pretty cheap printer, but honestly, I rarely print anything. It'll be weeks sometimes before I print anything. Really, the only thing I print is my speeches when I go out, just in case my computer were to fail and I would need something that was a hard copy. But other than that, I rarely print anything. I also have a Fujitsu ScanSnap 1300 scanner. This is how I convert all paper to digital. And I hate paper, and I'm pretty much a paperless office, but I simply scan it through my scanner. It inserts it automatically into Evernote, complete with the tags, etc. And if you want something a little more robust, you can check out the Fujitsu ScanSnap S1500 Deluxe Bundle Sheet Fed Scanner. That's a mouthful, isn't it? But it's sheet fed, and the one I've got will do multiple sheets, but it won't do a whole stack of paper like the sheet fed version of it will do, but it's cheaper. I also have a time capsule, which is my backup system at the house and at the office, and I use that with Time Machine to automatically back up everything I do every hour. And one of the things you'll get as we work through this list of tools is that I am basically paranoid. I've lost data in the past. It's not a pleasant experience, especially when it's something you've worked hard on, and I do my dead level best to make sure that never happens. So I've got backups of backups, and Time Machine is one of my backup systems, and I'll talk more about that as I go through this. Another piece of hardware, again, this is all under the heading of hardware. I've got a big Jambox, which is manufactured by Jawbone, and that's a Bluetooth speaker system that's excellent. It's a little bit flaky sometimes. I have a hard time connecting it, but when it works, it's great. But I think if I had to do it over again, I would do what I've got at my home office, which is just a Bose wired system that, you know, it is foolproof. It works every time, first time, every time. I also have an iPad mini. I've got the black edition. I've got a 64 gigabytes worth of storage on that with cellular access. Honestly, if I had to do it over again, I would just get 16 gigabytes of storage because everything's in the cloud. All my documents, my music collection, everything's in the cloud. There's no reason that I need that much storage, but you know, I kind of got caught in a pattern of buying at the top of the line, and that was one place where it didn't make sense. And also that brings me to my iPhone 5, which is also black. It's also 64 gigabyte. And if I had to do that over, I would get a smaller drive on that as well, flash drive. So that's all into the category of hardware. Now let's move to the category of startup software. And when I say startup software, this is the stuff that's automatically loaded on my computer whenever I boot up. So the first thing I use is a program called StartUpizer, StartUpizer, StartUpizer. This is a program that manages all my startup items, and I like it much better than using the built-in system that comes with the Mac. And the reason I like it is because it allows me to have different startup configurations. For example, when I speak in public, I don't want everything loading that normally loads because it can run interference or it can interfere with my presentation software, gobble up RAM. I've been in a situation before where I've been trying to play a video with a live audience of hundreds of people and it choked because it ran out of RAM. Now that hasn't happened since then, but I want to strip down configuration when I'm doing my presentation, and StartUpizer allows me to do that. I just can reboot, hold down the option key, and the program will only load the programs that I tell it to and not the usual stuff. So that's the first thing that I load with my startup system. That's actually the only thing that's in the account system in the system preferences, and then it handles everything from there on out. I run another program called Alfred, and in fact, this is the first program I install on any new computer. I put it on Gail's computer because I got so tired of trying to help her and not having this on there, but it's a small productivity application that saves you time for searching the web or searching your computer, and the thing I love about it is that it has the ability to configure custom searches. So for example, I can search my blog by just preceding the search with the letters MH, as in michaelhyatt.com. So I put MH, and then whatever it is I'm looking for, it only searches my blog. Or I can search Amazon by preceding the search with AM. And this is all user configurable. And I've got a bunch of these in there, custom searches. I can also use it to load a program that I don't have mapped to my next program, which is called iKey. But Alfred is fantastic. Now, iKey, this is essentially a macro processor, if you know what that is. But I use it to create keyboard shortcuts to all my applications. I really hate using the mouse. I'm a reluctant mouse user. I much prefer the keyboard because I'm just that much faster. But for example, I press Shift Option Control H, all in one keystroke, to get to Hootsuite, or Shift Option Control P to get to Pathfinder, which is my replacement for the Finder application. But after many years of using this, it's really locked into my muscle memory. I don't even think about it anymore, but I do all that through iKey, and it really befuddles me when I get a computer that doesn't have iKey with my configurations installed on it. So that's also another first program that I install when I get a new computer. Another startup application that I use that's similar to these but is different is Typinator. This is what is commonly called a text expander, and there's many of them on the market. This is the one I use. I don't even know if it's better than the other ones or not even as good, but it's what I've come to use, and I've got hundreds and hundreds of abbreviations in it so that when I type in the abbreviation, it responds with whatever text you want. It could be a word, like auto correction of spelling. It could be a paragraph. It could be an email signature. It could be an entire document. But you type in the abbreviation, and then you type all the text you want to expand when you type that abbreviation. So hugely, hugely helpful. By the way, I use it to insert HTML code and all kinds of boilerplate templates. Another application, CrashPlan. This is my offsite backup solution. So Time Machine is on-site, but if my house were to burn down or my office were to burn down, God forbid, it's all backed up in the cloud by virtue of CrashPlan. There's a lot of these programs out there. I went with this one because of the reviews. The first time I backed up my system to CrashPlan, it took forever. I mean, like several days. But after that, it's all incremental. It just happens every couple of hours, and it just backs up the files that have changed since the last time it backed up. So it's very efficient, very reliable, and I've always got it in the cloud. So it gives me a lot of peace of mind by having that program out there. Another program that I load at startup is a program called Stay, S-T-A-Y, and this is just a small little window app that ensures that my application windows are always where I want them to be, even as I connect and disconnect displays. So I've got several displays, including the laptop display, but it essentially memorizes the Windows configuration or position on each device. And then when you plug into that device, it magically resizes the windows so that they fit on that device like you had them the last time you used them. So had a friend recommend that to me, and I've loved it. I don't know what I did without it beforehand. Every time I would plug into a new display, I would spend several minutes trying to get all the windows back where I wanted them, and this just handles it all automatically. Few glitches. It's not perfect. For some reason, it can't memorize every window, but it does most of them, and it saves me a lot of time. Another startup application, Dropbox. Oh my gosh. I couldn't live without this application. I use it to share files with my family and business associates. I'm able to give access to both folders and files, and it syncs automatically with my local computer in the background. Now, here's the twist. Everything I used to store in my documents folder is now in my Dropbox folder. That means that every document on my computer is stored in the cloud, available on every device I have, which also serves as yet another backup system. But mostly I do that so it's available on every system. So no matter where I connect, whether it's on my iPad mini or my iPhone or my computer, I've got every single document out there. I mean, this is everything. There are no other documents that I have anywhere else. They all live in Dropbox. Another startup app, Pathfinder. This is a Finder replacement. It's really the system that Apple should have built to begin with, but it provides multiple windows and tabs, and it's really everything you would want in a file management system. I think there's even a trial available, so give it a try. It's a great program. Snagit is another startup program that I use, but I use this program for all my screen capture needs and annotations. It's something I use daily. It has a robust set of effects tools like borders, drop shadows, reflections, perspective. It also has an amazing array of annotation tools. It can also do video capture of your screen, and I do this for quick video captures, like if I'm trying to explain something to a colleague or a friend or a family member, I'll just record it in Snagit, and then it can automatically upload it to the Snagit website, returns to you a link, and you can forward the link to somebody and they can watch your screencast. Now, we'll say for more robust screencasts like the ones that I do at Platform University that are, you know, anywhere from 30 to 45 minutes long, I use ScreenFlow, which is a terrific program. That's an amazing program in so many ways. But I love ScreenFlow, but I don't use it for the simple stuff. It's just, you know, it's overkill. Another startup program is CoBook. CoBook is an interface to Apple's Contacts application, formerly the address book, but frankly, it's what Contacts should be. My favorite feature is that it will look up the contacts information on Twitter and or Facebook and allow you to synchronize the user's photos. So much better in my view than the Contacts application. It's what Apple should have designed to begin with. Another application that I load on startup is Messages. This is the standard Mac app for text messaging. It used to be called iMessages, but I don't really like text messages except for my family and teammates. However, it is, you know, it's more disruptive, but typically faster than email. But I still use it and I keep it loaded all the time unless I'm really into serious writing or content generation and then I unload it. Apple Mail is another application that I start up when I reboot, but I've tried almost every Mac Mail software program ever written, including most recently Mailplane, Postbox, Sparrow. I know some of you probably use those programs and love them. Great, more power to you. But I keep coming back to Apple Mail. It really does everything I need, especially now that I have also installed Mail Tags and Mail Acton, which are two add-in applications that beef up Apple Mail. Then Hootsuite is another thing that I load automatically. Now, this is my Twitter dashboard. It can also be used for Facebook and LinkedIn too. I don't really use it for that, but it allows me to monitor direct messages, mentions, and the tweets of those I follow, and it arranges lists of users into columns. For example, I have one for family, work associates, industry sources, and so on. So I can quickly see what's happening with any specific group. And I also use this tool to send messages and replies. And I've taken, this is actually a web app, but I've used another program called Fluid to turn this into a bona fide application so it loads as a separate application. And I've got a link in the show notes to all these applications, including Fluid. So if you want to turn a browser-based website into an application, you can, and it's very simple. You'll be surprised. But I use that for several applications, including Hootsuite. Evernote, if you've been listening to my podcast for any time, or if you've read my blog, you know I'm an Evernote maniac. It's my digital brain. I store everything here. Receipts, web clippings, Kindle notes, meeting notes, you name it. I like it so much, I wrote a series of 12 posts about it on my blog, and it's an application I launch at startup. I keep it open all the time. There's probably no other application other than Apple Mail that I go to as frequently as Evernote. Another startup app, Google Calendar. I have to have a calendar in my work that I can share, and it's got to be accessible by my family, by my team members like my managers, my booking agents, etc. And Google Calendar provides all the functionality I need. And by the way, I do use Fluid to turn that into a web app as well. And then I use Google Chrome as a startup app. This is my browser of choice. I find it's faster than Safari or Firefox. Your mileage may vary, but it's also got some memory quirks that bother me from time to time. If I get too many tabs open, it can really slow down my system or make it a little quirky. And I don't know for sure, by the way, if that is Chrome or if I just think it's Chrome, but I know when I've looked it up in Activity Monitor, it seems to be the one that's hogging the most CPU cycles. So at any rate, I still like it. It's the one I use, but it's not perfect. And then the last program that I load at startup is Nosby. This is my task management system. And I've tried them all, I think, including OmniFocus and Things and, you know, all there's just a ton of them out there. And I always keep trying them as they come out because I'm a fiend for this kind of thing. But I keep coming back to Nosby. It has a little bit of a learning curve. It sometimes is quirky itself, but I've not found anything that is more powerful or more flexible, and it just keeps getting better. And I've got a relationship with the developer. He's very responsive. He continues to improve it, and I just love his philosophy of life. But the trick for me is to use labels to group projects together, and that keeps my system organized and manageable, and Nosby also integrates with Evernote and with Dropbox, which is another thing I like as well. So those are my startup programs. That's the second category, and that leads me to the third category. Let's talk blogging. Now, you guys know if you've listened to my podcast or you read my blog that I also love WordPress. I converted from TypePad to self-hosted WordPress in 2008, and I haven't looked back. In my opinion, it's the most robust yet easy-to-use blogging platform out there. And you'll find thousands of themes, plugins, tools that work with WordPress. Best of all, it's free. However, you will pay for hosting, themes, and some plugins. But the basic software is free, and I love that. So if you're not on WordPress, if you're on some other platform, it's only a matter of time before you're going to be on WordPress. So go ahead and do it now. There'll be some conversion hassle, but sooner is probably better than later. Another tool in the blogging category is Bluehost for hosting. If you use WordPress, as I recommend, you're going to need a blog hosting service too, and I recommend Bluehost. And currently, they're offering a special $3.95 a month rate to my readers, which is fantastic. And I also have a free screencast that will show you how to set up a WordPress site in Bluehost in 20 minutes or less. Now, full disclosure, I don't use Bluehost for MichaelHyatt.com. MichaelHyatt.com has got too much traffic, and Bluehost is really set up for what's called shared serving, where you're one blog on a server with a number of blogs. I require for MichaelHyatt.com a dedicated server. In fact, I have two servers. One of them's mirrored to the other one, so that if one goes down, the other one picks up, and there's no... It's completely seamless to the end user, but you know how much I like backups by now. So I do that on my hosting as well. But Bluehost is not really in that business. But unless you're getting up to, you know, upwards of 100,000 unique visitors a month, Bluehost is fantastic. Then I use another tool called GetNoticed. This is my brand spanking new theme. I designed it myself. My web developer and partner, Andrew Buckman, coded it. We're planning to start selling this in the next few months. It's in beta, but before this, I used Standard Theme, which is also very good. Elegant Themes, Woo Themes, and StudioPress are also great options. Another blogging tool is FeedBurner. This is owned by Google. Some people, particularly those who are more tech savvy, will prefer to subscribe to your blog via RSS, and I use FeedBurner to manage my RSS feed. It's, as I said, a free service owned by Google. It's easy to set up. It has an email module tool, but I still prefer using MailChimp. More about that in just a minute. There's been a lot of discussion and rumor on the internet that FeedBurner is going to shut down. I don't know if that's true or not. I have a really hard time imagining that that would happen. But anyway, I just, you know, I feel the need to say that. But I like FeedBurner. My RSS feeds, including my podcast RSS feed, is linked to FeedBurner, and I'm just not worried about it. You know how much I love backups, but I'm not worried about this. Another tool. Discuss, spelled D-I-S-Q-U-S. This is my commenting platform. It's used by thousands of large sites, and it's become the de facto standard on professional blogs. It's super easy for your readers. It allows them to manage their comments across many sites without having to sign in every time. And it's also very useful to you as a blogger because they do compile stats and have a lot of tools. I love the spam filtering feature of it because I get spam on my site comment spam every single day, and Discuss, once you train it, is pretty infallible. It does a great job of corralling that kind of mischief. Another tool, MailChimp. As any internet marketer will tell you, nothing is more important than building your own email list. And I use MailChimp to manage mine. It has a super easy to use interface, great analytics. It's 100% reliable. I love it. Now, other people prefer AWeber. I don't think you can go wrong, honestly, with either one. It's just that I'm already invested in MailChimp. I started with that, and I love it. Another very important blogging tool is a plugin called Akismet, A-K-I-S-M-E-T. This is a plugin that actually works with Discuss to control comment spam. And even though I get more than 500 comments a day, I get very little spam. And Akismet blocks almost all of it, so it never sees the light of day. It creates less work for you, less friction for your readers. For example, you don't have to require them to register to leave a comment, which I really recommend. If you want to discourage comments and discourage community, require people to register before they can leave a comment. You don't probably have more comments than I do, and I can handle it because of Akismet and because of Discuss working hand in hand together. Fantastic tools. Another tool, this is must have. It's one of the first things I install on any new blog. I was helping one of my daughters set up her blog this week on WordPress, and this is one of the first things that we did was get her a Google Analytics account and install the tracking ID so that she could have good measurement of all the important metrics on her blog. But this is the gold standard when it comes to analytics. If you want to track your unique visitors, your page views, your bounce rate, how many of your users are on a mobile platform, a host of other metrics, you need to sign up for a free account and then follow the directions for installing it on your blog. It's only gotten easier. It used to be a bit of a hassle, but now it's really easy with most themes. Another tool that I use when it comes to blogging is Scribe SEO. Now, this is not going to be for everyone. It's a little expensive. I got in at the early stages and got grandfathered into a great price. But this is a premium plugin I use to optimize my WordPress posts. It analyzes each post. Then it assigns it a percentage grade, with 100% being a perfect score. And best of all, it suggests how to improve the score by offering different keywords and metadata so that you can optimize it for the search engines. It was developed by the very smart folks at Copyblogger. And if you're thinking about becoming a professional blogger, or you consider yourself a professional blogger, I think Scribe SEO is a very good investment. Another tool that I use when it comes to blogging, I'm kind of laughing at myself here because I put so many stinking backup tools. Maybe I need to see a therapist. Any rate, this is called VaultPress, but it backs up your blog on a regular basis. Disasters happen, and they happen to blogs. I've had my blog hacked a couple of times, and if I hadn't had something like VaultPress, I would have had a world of hurt. But you don't want to lose days, weeks, or years worth of content simply because you didn't have it backed up. One of my favorite bloggers, my good friend Pat Flynn, was hacked a couple weeks ago, and he was down for about a week. I don't know how he had it backed up, but he did have it backed up. But VaultPress is a very good option. It's developed by Automattic, which is the same people who built WordPress. So the integration is seamless. You turn it on and then literally forget about it, and it backs up your blog every hour. Another tool I use when it comes to blogging is iStockPhoto. If you want your post to get noticed, you must use photos. They pull people into the content. Yes, you can get free ones at places like Flickr.com, but personally, I can't afford the time. Now, unfortunately, iStockPhoto has been acquired by Getty Images, and they're a fine company. I don't mean it's unfortunate they were acquired, but their prices have gone up progressively. But it's still probably the largest online stock photo database available, and it's just less hunting for me when I can go there. But they offer a 20% discount to my readers. If you click in the show notes on the link for iStockPhoto, you'll get that 20% discount. And of course, I use Evernote also to store every blog post idea, as well as plugins that interest me, design ideas, and a raft of other things related to my blog. So that's the blogging category. Fourth category, writing. Now I'm talking about writing blog posts, writing papers, writing books, all of that. I'm going to cover all that under this category, but these are some of the tools that are in my toolbox. Byword, that's all one word, Byword. This is a minimal, stripped down word processor. And unlike something like Microsoft Word, it's not bloated and it doesn't get in your way. I use it for writing almost anything, including my blog post. It also has markdown language baked in, which you don't have to know about, but it's really something I use extensively. But this is my go-to word processor of choice because, it's a minimalist configuration. It doesn't have, all these elaborate toolbars. You can't do anything with regard to formatting. All you can do is the one thing you need to do if you're a writer, which is to write. Another tool, the Chicago Manual of Style 16th edition. This is the Bible in the book publishing industry. It has an interesting introduction on the art of bookmaking, but its principal value is as a reference to all things related to grammar, style, and usage. And if you prefer, you can use the online edition, which is what I do. But I refer to this usually several times a month. Whenever I've got a question, I've got a lot of this memorized just after 30 years in the book publishing industry. But whenever there's a question, this is where I go for an answer. Another tool, Mars Edit, all one word. This is like a word processor for bloggers. It allows you to blog offline, including tagging your posts with the various kinds of metadata. You can schedule posts to appear in the future at the specific date and time you desire. I usually copy my text from Byword into Mars Edit, where I format, tag, and schedule it. And just recently, I stopped using Mars Edit only because I hired an editor and all that stuff with the metadata, with the tagging, with the scheduling, all that. I've got somebody who's doing that for me now, so I'm not using Mars Edit in my workflow any longer. But But if you're doing it all yourself, wow, this program is fantastic and a very engaged developer who's constantly updating it as well. Another writing tool, Pages. This is iWork Pages. It's made by Apple. But when I need something more robust than ByWord, especially for documents requiring heavy formatting, I turn to Pages. It's Apple's version of Word. But the interface is almost identical to Keynote, if you use that. But unlike Word, it's not bloated or slow. I find it much faster, much more intuitive, much more Mac-esque. Okay, another tool that I occasionally use is Microsoft Word. Ugh. I'm not a big fan of Word. I find it bloated and clunky. However, there are some things that only Word will do, and it has about every feature known to man, if you can just find it. I would probably never use Word, except for the fact that the publishing industry runs on it, and my editor insists on it, and also so many people use it that it's become the standard in cross-platform document exchange. I'm not very happy about that, but that's the way it is, and that's the world we live in. Another tool. I'm nuts about this tool. Scrivener. It's what I use for writing books. It's what I use to write the platform book. It's what I'm using to write my current book on life planning. But it's more than a word processor. It's really a writing studio. You have to try it to believe it. It's really great at organizing and reorganizing, storing research with each chapter, providing a distraction-free writing environment. And they've got a 30-day free trial if you want to check it out. So if you're serious about writing a book, start here. Watch a few of the videos to get up to speed. But it's really fantastic. Okay, a couple other resources. These are some books I'm going to mention quickly, and I don't want the show to go too long, so I'm going to get to these quickly. If you're a novelist, How to Write Best-Selling Fiction by Dean Koontz. Unfortunately, it's out of print, but you can still find it in used bookstores or through Amazon. It's the single best book I've ever read on writing fiction, but it's going to cost you about $50, so it's not cheap. Another book, On Writing by Stephen King. This is still my favorite overall book on writing. King chronicles his writing journey, which is worth the price of the book, but then he goes on to give his best writing advice. As one of the most successful, prolific writers of all time, his counsel, I think, is extremely valuable. Another book, which you've heard me mention on this podcast or on my podcast before, is The War of Art by Stephen Pressfield. But he really talks about the creative process. And I did a whole episode, my last episode on The Resistance, largely derived from this book. So go back and listen to that episode, or better yet, read the book if you want to get the scoop on this. But if you're struggling to follow through and really kind of get off the starting blocks, and I was going to use a more colorful metaphor, but I won't. But if you're trying to get going in your writing, read The War of Art. It's a kick where you need it. Then Writing a Winning Book Proposal are my ebooks that detail everything you need to know to write a book proposal that gets the attention of agents and publishers. It's been used by publishing professionals for more than a decade. It's become the de facto standard in the book publishing industry, and you can find out more by clicking on the link in the show notes. Let's move to the fifth category, which is speaking. Keynote. This is the software package that single-handedly converted me from PC to Mac. If you're not familiar with it, it's Apple's alternative to PowerPoint. It's easy to use and produces amazing, beautiful slides. The graphic capabilities are so robust that I usually use it in place of Photoshop for designing almost everything, from websites to little, you know, advertisements to I use it for everything. Another tool I use in my speaking is the Keyspan Remote. This is a remote slide control unit I use when I speak publicly. Yes, I do know I can use my iPhone for this, but the Keyspan is a third of the size of a phone. It can fit in the palm of my hand, and no one knows I even have it. It turns me into a magician. Nobody sees it. They just magically, my slides change when they're supposed to. Another tool, Omni Outliner. This is where every speech starts for me. It's easier to use than a word processor. It allows me to rearrange and move around different elements of my speech, creating a thorough outline of my presentation. I also notate the slide numbers in a column to the right of the outline. And I've got examples on my website of this, but Omni Outliner is fantastic. Photoshop. I kind of put this in the category of Microsoft Word. I use Keynote for most of my graphic design needs, but for those really difficult jobs, I use Photoshop. And to be honest, as I said, I'm not a big fan. I find the interface non-intuitive and clunky, and I know that's probably heresy to those of you who are designers, but for raw power, I haven't found anything that comes close to Photoshop. It does anything if I can just figure out how to do it. Then there's Evernote, of course. When it comes to my speaking, I use it as a database for my illustrations, quotes, statistics, speech ideas, sometimes even rudimentary outlines. If I just have a quick burst for an idea, I'll just put it in Evernote and capture it for later. A couple other tools, the Launch Conference. You've heard me talk about that on my podcast, but this is a conference I co-own with my partner, Ken Davis. It's about the business of public speaking, how to get booked, what to charge, how to create products you can sell at the back of the room, et cetera. It's for professional speakers or for those who are considering becoming a professional speaker and want to make money doing it. Another tool, the SCORE Conference. This is another conference I co-own with Ken Davis. It's designed for professional speakers and those who simply want to communicate more professionally. Now, while Launch is about the business of public speaking, SCORE is about how to prepare and deliver your speech in a way that maximizes its impact on the audience. It literally changed everything about how I communicate. I use the information from the SCORE Conference daily. It's the most used conference content that I've ever had. And I can't recommend this highly enough. I do have a vested interest, but I love the SCORE Conference. You can go. There's a money back guarantee. And I promise you, you'll thank me later if you go. Sixth and final category is podcasting. Now, I have to confess, everything I know about podcasting, I learned from Cliff Ravenscraft at the podcast answerman.com. The podcasting equipment I use is exactly what he recommends at podcastanswerman.com/equipment. Let me say that again. podcastanswerman.com/equipment. So I'm not going to repeat Cliff's whole list here. Let me just mention a few tools he doesn't discuss on that page. Many of these tools are also recommended by Cliff, but he doesn't discuss them on that page, and it's taken me a while to gather these, so let me just mention them. Adobe Audition. This is the audio editing software I use. Now, it's expensive. It's about like $300 plus. It's probably overkill. There are free or cheaper alternatives available. I bought it because Cliff recommended it and has some good tutorials about it. It's super easy to use, and I feel like I'm only tapping about 5% of its capabilities. But that was easier for me and cheaper than going out and getting some other program where I didn't have a mentor and try to learn it on my own. Another tool, Blueberry PowerPress. This is the WordPress plugin I use to embed my podcast on my blog. It uses a simple, elegant interface and provides a very nice audio player so your listeners can simply click play to listen to your show right on your site. Another tool, BroadVoice. This is one of two voicemail services I use to capture questions and feedback from my listeners. If you've listened to this podcast before, you know that I have questions at the end of the show, and these are all done through BroadVoice or another application called SpeakPipe. The thing that's nice about this is that you can dial an 800 number, leave a voicemail message, and then the system mails me or emails me a WAV file of the recording, which I can edit and then insert into the show. SpeakPipe is the second of the two voicemail services I use to capture questions and feedback. The cool thing about this one is they don't have to call a number. They just click on a little widget on my podcast page, and it opens an application, and they can leave their message right there. And then SpeakPipe emails me an MP3 file of the recording, which I can edit and insert into the show. Another tool, although she may not appreciate me referring to her as a tool, but is Ginger Shell. She does all the transcriptions for my shows. She does a masterful job. She's a little more expensive than other services, but English is her first language, and she pays attention to the details. She really organizes it, and when you want it done right, she's the one to call. Another application I use, ID3 Editor. This is a single-purpose software package. It does one thing well. It allows you to create the metadata for your audio files, so when you upload them to iTunes, it's all there. Another tool, Libsyn, as in Liberated Syndication. If you're going to do podcasts and you want to host these files not on your own blog, but on a media server like Libsyn, which can handle thousands of simultaneous listeners. And if you have hundreds of people trying to access your media files all at once, you can crash your server if you're not crazy. So that's why I use Libsyn for one pretty low flat monthly rate. And then Omni Outliner, which I've discussed before, that's also where every podcast starts. I do my show prep in Omni Outliner, and I'm actually reading from it or referring to the notes as I'm doing this podcast. Another tool, Soundbite, and that's spelled all as one word, Soundbite, B-Y-T-E. This is another single-purpose program, but allows me to queue up audio clips like my musical intro, my outro, as well as listener questions, and play them in real time when I record my podcast. It's also a little buggy, especially on Mountain Lion, but it works. You just kind of have to get used to it, and I haven't found anything else that I can use. Last tool that I would recommend under podcasting is my timer utility, and it's pretty much as the name suggests. It just times the podcast. I set it when I start so I can keep track of the time so it doesn't go too long. So look, I know that's a lot of stuff, but hopefully it'll give you some ideas. I love sharing this kind of information with other people, and I love hearing what they're using because I'm always looking for that edge, something that'll shave a few minutes off my schedule so I can be even more productive and, more importantly, more effective. So with that, let's get to some listener questions. The first question comes from my friend, Chris Jube.
Good morning, Michael. This is Chris Jube at chrisjube.com. I sure love your toolbox. I visit it quite often and kind of toy around with some of the tools that you include in your toy box, your toolbox rather. But I wonder if you have a toy box, one where there's some apps, applications that you haven't quite been confident enough to put into your toolbox that you're still experimenting with. I wonder if you would find it pleasurable to share those with your audience and your podcast audience and to see if we could experiment along with you. Thank you so much for everything you do, Michael. I sure appreciate you. Bye now.
Chris, I do have a toy box, at least metaphorically. I'm always playing with new tools. I love exploring new tools, but here's a couple that right now are in my toy box. They don't have enough status yet, or I don't have enough experience to move them into my toolbox, but these are some I'm playing with. A program called AudioNote. My manager and friend Brian Shear is using this on his iPad mini, but we sat in a meeting the other day, and he recorded the entire meeting on AudioNote as he was taking notes. Now, here's a cool thing. He could jump to any place in his notes and click on it, and it would play the recording or the part of the meeting that was happening at that moment. Very cool. Another application, Easy Video Suite. This is what we're using to process the videos that we use at Platform University. It's got a really cool player that allows you to do pop-ups and links and all kinds of stuff right in the video itself. But I'm just learning it, and I've got a long ways to go before that moves into my toolbox. Another application, GoToWebinar, and I think we're going to use this for Platform University. I'm not entirely sure, but right now that's the leading candidate. Another application I'm just using in my personal life is Spotify. I'm looking to use that to replace iTunes. Unfortunately, I've got all these playlists and everything already in iTunes, so the migration is taking some time. And then an application that I've been using for a while that I can't quite ditch, but I also can't quite move into my toolbox is one called Workflowy. And I like this because it's kind of like Omni Outliner, kind of like Evernote, kind of like Noseby. I'm not sure it knows what it wants to be, but I keep playing with it because there's some things that I really, really like about it. So great question. Those are a few things in my toy box right now. The next question comes from Christelle.
Hi, Michael. My name is Christelle. I'm calling from Switzerland and I blog at handymarketer.com. I have a question about Evernote. I know that you use Evernote a lot. In fact, that's how I found you first. I use Evernote too, but I struggle to know how to organize it. I would love to hear how you organize your notebooks, mainly for blogging, from inspiration to drafts, ideas, etc. How do you organize them? And by the way, I think that would be a great screencast. Thanks for your great work, and I look forward to hear from you what you have to say.
Thanks, Christelle. I actually have a blog post called How to Use Evernote as a Blogger, and there's a link in the show notes. But I just basically throw everything in one notebook called Cabinet, and my workflow has changed since I wrote that post. It's a perfectly good workflow, and I would suggest you review it because it may suggest some ways that you can adapt your workflow for use with blogging and with Evernote. But here's what I do now. I have pretty much one notebook that I use for everything. I've really simplified my system since I wrote that series of posts about Evernote. I've got a notebook called Cabinet, and then I use a bunch of different tags. I've got one for michaelhyatt.com, so I tag things that pertain to that with that tag. Then I've got a tag called This Is Your Life, which is this podcast, and I use that for anything related to the podcast. Then I have a tag called Design Ideas. I have one for Post Ideas, and I have one for WordPress. So those pretty much comprise all of my tags. But if I'm looking, for example, if I'm I see a blog that I really like the design of, or I read something on, for example, Vandalay Design, where they're talking about the design of something, and that stimulates my creativity, I just do a web clip and I save it with the tag design ideas. But here's where I use it the most, post ideas. Every post idea I have goes in as a separate note into Evernote. And I'm always reviewing those to see if there's something that I want to write on that I'm excited about that I can write into a full-length post. Now, I don't write it in Evernote. I used to. And the post that I mentioned earlier, I detail that process. But now instead, what I do is I write it in Byword. That's where everything begins because, again, it's more minimalistic. And I don't think Evernote is great as a word processor. Some people love it. And if it works for you, great. It's one less tool you have to use. But that's how I kind of organize things. The next question comes from Derek.
Hello, Mr. Hyatt. My name is Derek Olson from hisplushers=ours.com. My question for you today about your toolbox is, do you do any A-B split testing on your website, and what kinds of tools do you use to do any sort of split testing on your website for different web pages? Thanks a lot.
Derek, this is probably an area where I don't practice what I espouse. I really do believe in split testing. I think it can be enormously helpful. I have done it in the past, and I've used it from time to time on landing pages in particular, but I'm not currently really accessing it or using it that much. I would recommend, though, one tool that I did find that I really liked that I used was something called title split testing for WordPress, and it allows you to test the titles that you use, and it basically lets people vote what they click when they click on the homepage and click through to the single post page, then that gets a vote. And you can set it like, for example, the first title that gets to 200 click-throughs becomes the title. And it's a very cool little tool. There's a link that I have in the show notes to something called 10 WordPress plugins for A-B split testing. It'll give you some examples that you can use. But again, for me, I'm not practicing this like I should, but don't let that stop you. You ought to be doing it. Thanks. The next question comes from Eric.
Hey, Michael. This is Eric Ream. I'm calling from Bloomington, Indiana. I blog at ericream.com. My question is about the writing app. I know you use Moleskine writing app for your iPad mini. I also have an iPad mini and I have the Moleskine on there as well. But I wanted to know if you've tried any others like the Penultimate. I know you're a big Evernote fan, and I know they've purchased that one. I wanted to know if you've tried that or if you have any other options or note-taking software that you've tried like NoteShelf. I'm trying to land on one that can connect to Evernote effectively, and I like Moleskine, but it's not quite everything I like, and wanted to see if you have any other advice or options. Thanks.
Eric, I really haven't tried any other note-taking apps besides Moleskine since I first bought my iPad mini. I went through and I got as many of them as I could, and I just tried them all out, and I wanted to find something that kind of fit with the way I take notes. And I found the Moleskine, I like that one. I like the way that it works. It just kind of works according to a metaphor that I'm used to using, but if you don't like it, that's fine. Penultimate, I did try it. It didn't really work for me. It was a little bit too simple, too basic. Frankly, I think Evernote could do a better job and bring some bells and whistles to that that it doesn't currently have. But try them both and then decide. They're not that expensive. I can't remember what the price is on them. I think the Moleskine one is free, but I could be wrong on that. But regardless, give them a shot. Let us know what you find out in the show notes for today. I'd love to hear from you in the comment section. The next question comes from my friend Eric.
Hello, this is Eric Fisher from Marion, Indiana. I podcast over at beyondthetodolist.com. Hey, Michael, I was thrilled to hear about your new topic for your next podcast. And that's one of those things that's just like, man, when you find a killer app or a hardware or software piece that just does the right job, it's awesome. But there's a lot of stuff out there. And I'm wondering, what do you do to make sure you spend enough time with a software or hardware tool, but not so much time that then once you've, you know, sunk 20 hours, 40 hours or something into using it, that then you finally realize, okay, it's not for me. Do you have any kind of advice on, you know, how much is too much playing around with the toys, so to speak, before you actually are getting work done? Very, very interested to hear what your thoughts are on that.
Well, Eric, this is a problem for me too, because, you know, you start playing with an application and you get into it pretty far if you're not careful, and have invested a lot of time, and then you find out it doesn't work, and it's basically burned up a lot of time that you're never going to get back. So here's what I do. I get recommendations from people I trust. That's why I like listening to these kinds of shows. It's why I like listening to your show, why I like listening to Ray Edwards' show, because both you guys talk about tools a lot, and I want recommendations from people I trust. I read reviews in magazines also. You know, I take magazines like Macworld, and I read the reviews and see what I can find there. I read user reviews. Sometimes those are the best reviews of all because they don't have a dog in the hunt, so to speak. Sometimes I make a list of requirements, what I'm looking for, and then I try to match up the software according to the requirements and get a little bit more scientific about it. But Workflowy is a good example. I sunk a ton of time into that thinking I might use it instead of Noseby, but there's no way to send email to it or even include attachments. And I was hours into it and I even got my team using it and then discovered, no, this isn't going to replace anything that I've got. And so, like I said earlier, I keep it in my toy box, but it's not really in my toolbox anymore. The next question comes from Peter.
Hey, Michael, this is Peter from 168opportunities.com. And I was curious, how do you separate your personal and your work to-do items? I know for myself, I struggle if I'm at home and I see some of the things that I would typically do during the day in my list of action items, I'm still thinking about them, and that sometimes prevents me from taking care of the things that really do need to get done. So I'm just curious if you have any mental hacks that you've done, or if you have a system in place that helps filter those out. Thanks for your podcast. I love it a lot, and keep it up.
Peter, I do code them in Noseby with a separate tag or context. I have this kind of David Allen approved, but an at-home tag and an at-work tag or label. But I don't really make much use of that. Mainly, I start with a to-do list every day with the 5 to 7 things that I've got to get done for that day. And then I sequence them. What I'm going to do first, what I'm going to do second, third, and so forth. So I've completed most of my work-related tasks before I get home. So it just kind of naturally falls out that the home-related tasks are the tasks that are at the end of the day, and they're the ones that I'm going to do after I get done with my work-related tasks. So not very scientific. There's probably a lot of other ways to conquer that, but that's just what I do. The next question comes from Renee.
Hey, Michael. My name is Renee. I blog at reneferret.net. And my question for you on your next podcast and tools, someone that is starting out like me as a new blogger and probably that I like to focus a lot in more content and not as much as the theme and the image and the plugins, what is a great tool or a list of your most important tools that you might use at the beginning and probably not willing to spend as much money as you do now? Thank you for being such an inspiration, and I look forward to listening to your answers. Thank you.
Renee, I've got really simple advice for you. Use a word processor that's simple and gets out of the way. You really don't need anything else. My recommendation would be Byword. You can get it at the App Store for $10, and that's it. I really think that's all you need. You can write your post in Byword, then you can copy it over to the WordPress backend in the new posts, and you're done. Bingo. The next question comes from Robert.
Hi, Michael. This is Robert Kennedy with robertkennedy3.com. I noticed that you talk about Evernote quite a bit, and so do I. I use it all the time myself. What are your thoughts on using Evernote for business? Is that something that you use in your own business with your team, or do you really just use Evernote Premium? Are there features that you find useful in either? Thanks.
Robert, I have not tried Evernote Business. And for those of you who are listening who aren't familiar with that, it's a new product that Evernote introduced for enterprises. I just use Evernote Premium. Evernote Business, I know, has some additional features for enterprises, but I've not found a reason yet that's compelling enough for my small team to use it. Your mileage may vary. I would just investigate it and see if it has something for you. Next question comes from my friend Spence.
Hey, Mike, this is Spence Smith in Colorado Springs. My site is spencesmith.com. My question for you is, what do you use to write your posts offline and then to post them afterwards? That's it. Have a great day, buddy. Bye.
Spence, I used to use, as I said earlier, Mars Edit exclusively. So that's the one that I would recommend, if you don't have somebody that's editing your posts for you, Mars Edit. I think you'll love it. I have tried Evernote. Now I use Byword, but I also have an editor, as I said, and I just email her the HTML export from Byword, and she takes it from there. So let me leave you with this question before we get into a few announcements. What tools have I missed? What are you using that you think I should try? And to comment on this episode, go to my blog at michaelhyatt.com/45, as in episode 45. Well, I hope you've enjoyed this Encore episode. I have two quick announcements. If you're considering launching your own platform, you need to start with a self-hosted WordPress blog. You've heard me talk about this before, but it's important. This is not as complicated as it sounds. In fact, I've put together a step-by-step screencast on exactly how to do it. You don't need any technical knowledge. I walk you through the entire process of setting your very own WordPress blog up in exactly 20 minutes. The screencast is absolutely free, and you can find it at michaelhyatt.com/WordPress setup. All one word, WordPress setup. Second, I want to remind you about Platform University, my online membership site for helping you launch your platform and get your message noticed. Every month, we post 4 new sessions for our members. Week 1 is the masterclass interview, where I interview the world's leading experts on some aspect of platform building. Week 2, member makeover, is where I evaluate one of our members' platforms, provide the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I do this as a screencast so you can look over my shoulder and see what I see. Then in week 3, Backstage Pass, where I take you behind the scenes and reveal some aspect of my business and how I do what I do. And then in week 4, we have our live question and answer call, where you have a chance to get your specific questions answered in a live conference call, which we, by the way, also record. In addition, we have an incredibly active discussion forum where people ask and get answered all kinds of platform-related questions. So again, check us out at platformuniversity.com. Well, that's it for this Encore episode of This Is Your Life. If you've enjoyed this podcast, let me encourage you to show the love by going to michaelhyatt.com/love and tweeting a link to the show. I'd be so grateful. If you'd like to comment in this episode, please go to michaelhyatt.com, go to the show notes for this episode, and scroll down to the comment section. I would love to hear from you, whether it's a comment, a question, or whatever. But until next time, remember, your life is a gift. Now go make it count. This is your life. Are you who you want to be? This is your life.